Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. And today I'm going to be talking about a book that I actually finished reading or listening to as an audiobook last week, but I only just get around to recording it because as I was preparing to do that podcast and, you know, I made some notes and stuff, then I finished another book, The Replay by Ken Grimwood, and me and Juliana talked about that about a week ago, whenever it was, and recorded that, and I never got around to recording this one. But now I've got a bit of time, so let's talk about Poseidon's Children, book number three in Poseidon's Children series by Alistair Reynolds, and this is called Poseidon's Wake. And this, again, is a weird thing that I can keep talking about second and third books in series, not knowing how to talk about them too much without spoiling what has gone before. However, this is actually a much easier way of doing it because what happened in the first book in this series, then there was like a big gap of like decades and decades. And then the second book is like in a different place with different cast of characters. Some of them are connected, but not... you know, it's kind of like family members of the main characters in that first book. And then the third book is set like hundreds of years or 100 and some years after the second book. And again, it's not following all of the main characters. Again, it's just family members going through. And there are many connections through them, but they're more kind of thematic connections and sort of location connections rather than story connections. So much so that I saw on the Goodreads page for this work, it starts off like this. This is the blurb. It says, "This novel is a standalone story which takes two extraordinary characters and follows them as they independently begin to unravel some of the greatest mysteries of our universe. Their missions are dangerous and they are all venturing into the unknown. And if they can uncover the secret to faster than light travel, then new worlds will be at our fingertips." Now, that blurb is incorrect in many ways. First of all, this is not a standalone novel. This is a third book in a series, and it really wouldn't make... I mean, I guess you could read it and go, right, okay, I don't know these characters that they keep referencing, and there's this spaceship which is named after this character, and they talk about Travertine, the spaceship, but also Travertine was a person. So who are they talking about here? Those kind of things, it just wouldn't make enough sense. And also, like I say, the themes that have gone all the way through and the different characters and locations wouldn't make much sense. But also it says here, if they can uncover the secret to faster than light travel, the new worlds will be at our fingertips. The problem is this is an Alistair Reynolds book. And Alistair Reynolds, being a one-time, I think, European Space Agency physicist person, he is not actually a... he doesn't write any stories where faster than light travel exists. I mean, he does, but there's always sort of like a big qualifying thing, and it breaks reality, it breaks causality. There are no faster than light travels. There is no time travel and all the time dilation. I mean, lots of stuff about time dilation, but nothing about that can break through that thing. So that is actually incorrect in two ways, this blurb. So this is actually a key thing to understanding. A key way into a lot of Alistair Reynolds books, because he doesn't do faster than light travel, all of his space opera is kind of slow in a way that, like, oh, we need to get from here to there. How long is that going to take? That's going to take 80 years. So a lot of his stories are based around it taking a long time for things to happen, a long time for things to get places. There's his book which spans like a post-human society grows up, which goes across the entire galaxy and people clone themselves and there's many people and they spread out, and then every like 50,000 or 100,000 years they get back together again and all have a meeting. And the different, you know, the different characters in these houses, that's House of Suns, and then there's different houses and they meet together as well. So you get that kind of idea that it's sort of like things take a really long time. And in this case, there's the precursor technology or the precursor civilization, the Wayfarers, you understand that they have taken a long time to move around as well. And there they can only exist, you know, in this very slow, you know, computer mind state where they don't really have self-awareness anymore. They've lost that consciousness, but they're just sort of like programs which have been, you know, are continuing on the mission of the once sentient species, but now they are kind of just playing out the rules and trying to do things in ways that, you know, couldn't be done before. And that happened a bit. You just kind of discovered some of these in the second book. But yeah, the idea that like things take a long time to happen, And also this allows for, and this happens at the start of this book, and it happens at the start of quite a lot of Alistair Reynolds' space opera books, in that, well, pretty much all space opera books, but so many times that you'll be reading about one group of people, about one person with one group of people in one solar system, and then on another solar system, something will be happening, and then on another solar system, something else will be happening, and these two or three groups will have to all arrive at the same place, or maybe, you know, two groups and different solar systems will converge on that third solar system, but like those stories always start, and you don't know how long it's going to take them, and then they say, oh, well, we're going to go into cold sleep for 80 years and then wake up on the other side. Oh, we're going to, you know, send off this generation ship and our great, great, great grandchildren will reach the other end. And so you don't have to, like, when these stories start off, you're never quite sure. It's like, are they happening at the same time? Well, yes, by the time they all arrive in the same place and look back at their subjective experience back over the last years or whatever it is, or year or action, yes, it will have all happened, but you quickly understand that the light cone, or whatever you say, the propagation of their actions throughout space-time makes it so that you can tell their stories concurrently, even though subjectively for the people left behind, things were happening 100 years ago or 200 years in the future or whatever. So there's these weird kind of time dilation effects that happens with not faster than light travel. There are some things where in this book, it's instantaneous travel, but the instantaneous travel happens only from the point of view of the people, you know, going through, let's say, a wormhole to bring an idea. So if you go through a wormhole, you just step in one side and come out the other side. But there isn't any, like, you arrive at the other side, you know, at 1% quarter of a percent less than, or 0.000% less than the speed of light would have taken you to get to the other side. So it's kind of information transmission at the speed of light, but there's no subjective time for you to get from one place to the other, which is different from a lot of, you know, portals to other world kind of speculative fiction, science fiction stuff. So that's kind of where we are at the start of this book. You've got characters, one character that you know from the second book, another character on Earth, some characters in different solar systems, but two main characters, and they are family members. Let me see if I've got the names. I made a note of these names before. So you get Goma Akinya, and Ndege Akinya, and Eunice Akinya, and Kanu Akinya is on Earth and stuff. So as you can see, a lot of, and Mpozi Akinya. So you can see these are all Akinya families. And the Akinya families were introduced very much so in that first book, and you follow them on a sort of like a grand tour of the solar system. The second book, they're going to another planet, and some big calamity happens at the end of the second book, or between the end of the second book and the start of the third book, put it that way. And then they kind of meet up with each other, and you can kind of work out who's going where. And you kind of spend time with these characters, and they go on a mission to a third solar system, away from Crucible, where they ended up at the end of the first book, and away from Earth, where they ended up in the second book. In the first book. First book set in the solar system, second book on the way to Crucible and ended up on Crucible, and this third book is set in another solar system, which, to be honest, I can't remember the name of now, but it's where a planet called Poseidon is, and it's a big watery planet, and some weird alien artifacts there, and they get a call saying, send Ndege, or one of the characters who was a big character in that second book. They're like, send this person. You're like, oh, okay, why do they need me there? But that person doesn't go. Her daughter goes. Goma heads off instead of her mother. I'm being a bit vague here and stuff, because really, to be honest, it's not... This book, I enjoyed it a lot, but it just felt in a way kind of comfortable to spend time with these characters, and it's fine to spend time with the Akinya family. And Eunice Akinya turns up, and she's really fun because we've been spending time with her since the first book. And then she was a computer simulation in the second book, and, you know, carrying on that kind of trajectory of sort of like, you know, you're artificial intelligence based on a human, and there's all that kind of stuff going on. You can go, well, do you have a will? Do you have feelings? Are you human? Are you not human? You've got more of a human body now, but you were in a computer once. What does that let you be? So there's all that kind of stuff going on. And some of the reasons they do this is because they've been told that the Tantors, which are the uplifted intelligent elephants, which were a big part of the first book, or I wouldn't say a big part, but kind of like a one of the main mysteries in the first book, and where the book started was sort of looking at some elephants, and then it ended with some elephants as well, and they also take some intelligent elephants on them in the second book, on the Steel Breeze, and so those things continue on as well, and then, as it says in the Goodreads blurb, they begin to unravel some of the greatest mysteries of our universe, and there's big dumb objects and run-ins with the Wayfarers, and which are the previous intelligence that have been shaping this area of our galaxy, and some others as well, and they're, you know, being used by aliens and being rewarded by aliens, but the aliens don't exist now in our world, they've just got technology left over, lots of big things like that, which is kind of what I want from science fiction quite often, big dumb objects with massive ramifications for the universe. But the good thing in this book, and this is something which felt kind of like new in a way that I haven't read so much recently in science fiction, but has existed, it feels very much like, okay, there's stuff going on in the universe, but there's at no point in this book is sort of like, and now the world is going to end, we've got to save the world, or now the galaxy is going to end, or now there's going to be an invasion, or now this. It kind of feels like, okay, there's some threats for some alien technology that's left over, and we don't want to upset them, and we don't want to, you know, there's things could happen, and we're kind of being restricted in our movements because these leftover alien artifacts are kind of restricting what we're doing. But there's never, it's never feels like in, even in other Alistair Reynolds books, sort of like, okay, there's a race of alien machines, or there's this group of alien machines that are trying to wipe out all life in the universe because reasons, or this alien is invading and they're going to take over the world because whatever, stuff like that. That's not this what this book is about. It kind of feels much more hopeful, even though there is big issues for the universe at stake, and what reality is, and the continuation of life and consciousness, even past the end of the universe, big issues like that. But the threat in this book always feels much like less existential and much more philosophical. Like, okay, if all of humanity is wiped out, why are we doing this? If there is no memories in the future, and there's quite a lot of kind of philosophical ponderings on that, and also not just from humans' point of view, but from other species' point of view, aliens' point of view, and also kind of from the point of view of artificial intelligences and why they do stuff, and also from the Tantors, the intelligent elephants kind of point of view. So I found this a kind of very comfortable read. And I think that's one of the updates that I put on Goodreads, was like, it feels just comfortable reading this. Alistair Reynolds, he can put together a sentence, he can put together some characters which are interesting, not all of them fantastic, but like, I kind of enjoy spending time with them. There's big questions, and we're wrapping up a story, and we're continuing themes from previous books. And it just felt kind of nice to read, or nice to listen to. It was a good audiobook. So it just felt like, I'm in, you know, an author I like, exploring themes that I like, doing space travel kind of things that I like, with some adventures of, you know, on spaceships, and, you know, some battles or some standoffs. You know, Alistair Reynolds does sort of like battles or standoffs and politics across a solar system scale, where there's all time delays and all that kind of stuff. This is what he does really well. It feels really real when people get into conflict with kind of like not like star-smashing, massive laser battle kind of technology levels, just sort of like, they're in that ship over there, we're in the ship here, what can we do to, you know, impose our will on them? What can we do? We don't want to destroy them, and we couldn't even destroy them because we don't, you know, we're just on civilian ships, we don't even have like spacecraft with weapons here. What can we do to get through this, to do all this kind of stuff? And, you know, Alistair Reynolds does all of that very well. He does the philosophical discussions very well, he does big dumb objects very well. However, I didn't feel there was anything in this book which really stood out to me and was meaning like, oh, this is a 5-star book. It's made me think of this so well, which he has done with other books. For example, House of Suns and some of the Revelation Space stuff, you know, those books, and the, for example, the Prefect, and some other books like that where, did I say Terminal World? Those books where I'm just like, oh, wow, this is doing something new with science fiction, or something interesting, or telling stories which I've never heard told before. This book doesn't feel like any of that. It just feels like, okay, somebody, Alistair Reynolds, he got a 10-book book deal. and got paid $1 million or £1 million or whatever it was to write 10 books. And this is just one of his series, and it feels very comfortable. Again, it's not bad, but it's not great. It's nothing groundbreaking, but it's kind of like, for me, it's comfort food in a way. Or comfort reading, just to spend time with this quality of writing, even if the story isn't there. Because I do have some issues with the pacing. Actually, let me just bring up here, because I looked on Goodreads, and there's Poseidon's Wake. Let me look at the series. Poseidon's Children. This is Poseidon's Children, book 3. I'll go through some of the timings here of the audiobooks, because I listen to all of these as audiobooks. At least I think so. Blue Remembered Earth by Alistair Reynolds, 21 hours and 49 minutes. Decent length for a chunky science fiction book. On the Steel Breeze, Poseidon's Children, book 2. Length, 23 hours and 10 minutes. I'm like, okay, bit longer, but you know, I can do that. No problem. Poseidon's Wake, Poseidon's Children, book number 3. By Alistair Reynolds, 27 hours and 9 minutes. And I'm like, okay, that's 6 hours or 5 to 6 hours longer than the first book. You know, another almost 20% longer than the first book. And it really didn't need to be that. It felt there was quite a bit of, you know, quite a bit of repetition, or it felt something's felt repetitive in ways which didn't really move the story on. I was like, okay, I know this, I've had this, let's move on with the story. And while there is some fun story, at some points it's sort of like, okay, now we're going to have the big dumb object adventure part, even though at that point of the book, the main questions, you know, these big questions of the universe and what's going on there had already been answered. And it's like, oh, now we have to just do a rescue mission of some kind, which was fun to read, but it did feel like a little bit, you know, like just tacked on and spent a little bit too much time. And in those actions, the characters were developing, the characters were, you know, sacrificing things, they were deciding things, big issues like that were happening. But it felt like, oh, we've paid off the big galaxy spanning universe altering, or like revelations of what's going on and how humanity is going to be changed in the future. Or what is the goal of humanity in the future? All these things which are going to kind of burst out and make humanity into this galaxy-spanning civilization, maybe. It's going to really kick into gear at the end of this book. That kind of felt like it had been resolved at that point. And there was a bit right at the very end where there's a little epilogue where one of the spaceships suddenly turns back up and they don't know where they are. They just suddenly appear somewhere and they're like, ah, okay. As like, there's stuff going on there, but that was really small. But after, like I say, that big revelation, you kind of got everything sorted out. It never really felt like it kind of needed that extra stuff at the end, except like, oh, we've got to wrap stuff up. And then once that whole thing had finished and all the characters are safe and like, right, okay, now let's go home. And I looked at the audiobook and there was still like another hour and a half, like 2 hours or something at that point. And I was like, now what's going to happen? And what happened was that Alistair Reynolds decided, okay, this, I wrapped up what the story of the book is. And in this book, and I wrapped up kind of like the story of the greater thing. But now I've got to wrap up the stories of all the different characters, which is fine. But it did, I would prefer that it didn't take as long as it did, because I was just like, I kind of, as soon as this started happening, I was like, oh, he's going to follow this character and they're going to do, you know, they're going to finish up what they do. And this character, and I knew that it was going to end in pretty much the same place as it started. Not in this book, but it started in book number 1 of the series, all the way back at Blue Remembered Earth. Was that the first book? Yeah. And that's what happened. So he didn't just wrap up the story in this book and the characters in this book. He also went back and wrapped up the characters in Blue Remembered Earth and On the Steel Breeze, and kind of wrapped up their stories and kind of put it all together. And that takes a long time to do. The same thing happened in the book that I reviewed recently by Peter F. Hamilton, which I will look up now. What do I need to do? Go to episode lists here on my, Peter F. Hamilton, A Knight Without Stars, Commonwealth, Chronicle of the Fallers, book number 2. He didn't just wrap up the characters in that book, he also wrapped up the characters here in the Chronicle of the Fallers number 1, and also in the other Commonwealth books, he went back and wrapped up some of the stories and went back and checked in on the characters who were in Pandora's Star and Judas Unchained and all of the, like, and the characters of in the Void trilogy. It's like, hey, remember this person who we haven't spent time with? But okay, let's go back, check in on them. What are they doing? Because he's wrapping up not just the story in one book, but in the case of the Commonwealth, like 7 books in total, he's going back through and checking in on people and wrapping up all their stories to kind of say goodbye to these characters and then move on to another series. And it feels very much like Alistair Reynolds was doing the same thing here. He was like, okay, this isn't a satisfying end to this novel, but if you sit down and read all of these books in a series, this is what's going to be good for you. However, I'm just now going to look back in this episode list page on sfbrp.com when I read these other books. Yeah, Poseidon's Children, 2012. Oh, sorry. Blue Remembered Earth, 2012. On a Steel Breeze, 2014. So I've read these books over 5 years. And sure, it's nice to revisit these characters, but I kind of felt like I'd revisit them by sort of like seeing what's happened to their family. I didn't really feel like I need to go back and kind of catch up with other things and other people on Earth and go back and see how the Earth has picked up since then and what's changing. I was like, no, I felt like this book was very outwards at this point. It's going to move on to new things in the future. I didn't feel like I needed like 2 hours, an hour and a half at the end of this book to kind of start looking backwards. I feel like a book which seems to end on the brink of the galaxy being kind of given over, or even more than the galaxy being given over to humans to explore and to expand, it felt like suddenly we're going backwards, and I felt like the character should have been moving outwards again in this book. And we kind of just went backwards, which is a bit of a pity. And it felt like a plotting and pacing error. What else have I got here? In my notes, which I made a week ago, naming ships after their characters. I quite like that. So even when a character dies, I'm not going to mention which characters dies, but yeah, that's it. Pacing issue, bit repetitive challenges, a bit early. Yeah, I've already got to the end of my notes about this book, which is weird because it's kind of a big chunky book with lots of stuff happening. Oh, I remember. Looking over on Goodreads, there's somebody here. I was looking at other people's reviews of this. And Tudor rated it 5 stars. Greg Kellogg, 4 stars. Pedro, these are my friends on Goodreads, SFBRP listeners pretty much. Pedro rated it 3 stars. This is the one that I thought I'd read out of. Tom rated it 4 stars. A solid end to a solid trilogy, but it didn't reach the heights of the Revelation Space series or House of Suns. Nevertheless, it is very optimistic science fiction work in the vein of Arthur C. Clarke, and we need more of those. Yeah, I guess that's kind of what I was saying before. So it feels like, sure, it's optimistic, kind of like the opposite of the Revelation Space universe. If you actually kind of have read through to the end of that series, you understand that the future does not look good for humanity or anyone. So this is more. But then Tom says, we got some answers, but even more questions and a little closure at the end. I say a lot of closure at the end. The coda about the destiny of the ship Zanzibar was tantalizing, but all too brief. Perhaps a future novel? I would read that novel. And he says, overall, a low-key ending to a fairly low-key trilogy about space travel, elephants, robots, and philosophy, devoid of the galaxy-dooming horrors. I guess I pretty much just said this in a longer way about galaxy-dooming horrors. And cutthroat factions of Reynolds' other works. Low-key isn't necessarily bad, though. Despite the relative lack of excitement, I'll always look fondly back on these books. I think I've come to love the Akinye family, the headstrong yet compassionate people that they are. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't realize how much that that review influenced me when I read it a week ago. Yeah, so that pretty much sums up my thoughts here. It's a low-key trilogy, which overall, compared to other books of Alistair Reynolds, when I look back at other things that I rated, like Revelation Space, The Prefect, that series, like all of those books are like 3.5 to 4.75 out of 5-star books, like really, really great books. Really, really enjoyed them. And these books, Blue Remembered Earth, 3.5 stars. On the Steel Breeze, 3 stars. This one, I'd say better than the second book. I'd give it like 3.5 stars. But it never felt like it had really burst through into what I know that Alistair Reynolds can do, say with Terminal World or House of Suns. Don't get me started on Century Rain. That book is awful. And Slow Bullets and Pushing Ice, I'm just looking at the other books here that I've reviewed, also okay-ish, but only 3 stars. And this feels like minor Alistair Reynolds work compared to his others. So, you know, I'd put this at the level of, you know, Pushing Ice rather than the best of the Revelation Space stuff and Terminal World and House of Suns. I would say that's probably the place to start, which is a pity because I kind of want that again from Alistair Reynolds. Of course, I am rereading the Revelation Space trilogy very slowly, but, you know, getting through them again, listening to them with Juliana, or reading them at the same time as Juliana so we can talk about them again. The good thing is that I just read on Alistair Reynolds' blog. It turned up on my RSS reader, and it says he's just handed in the final manuscript or some version of a manuscript for his next novel, which is going to come out next year, and it's a follow-up novel to The Prefect. which I think is one of my highest rated, really fun procedural science fiction utopia kind of situation, and having lots of fun in the glitter band around Yellowstone, the planet of Yellowstone. I'm looking forward to exploring that. He said there's some characters in common there. So that could be an interesting one, kind of like a preview before the melding plague in the Revelation stealth space universe, which is should be good. Hopefully it's a return to kind of maybe what the fans want. I don't know how it works out. But yeah, it'd be good to get back to that level. So looking forward to more books from one of my favorite authors, but it's good to clear this up. However, and this is what I'm saying, is that if someone said to me, hey, there's a series of three novels, that it's not going to blow you away, but you're going to be very comfortable, you're going to enjoy listening to these audiobooks, or you're going to enjoy reading the books, you're going to rate all of them about 3.5 stars, do you want to read it? And I'd be like, you know what? Yes. Because who doesn't want a book which is a 3.5-star book, which in my world means really good, like, oh, decent. If 2.5 stars is like middling average, where you read it and you go, well, that was a book. But like 3.5 stars is a big step up from there, and you go, that was a good book. I enjoyed that. Whereas once you get to 4, 4.5, 5 stars, it has to be like really, really special to get those higher ratings. Whereas this is sort of like, yeah, decent book. You'll enjoy this, won't you? Yeah, I'll enjoy this. Let's read it. Okay, let's read it. It felt very much like at that level, which I guess Alistair Reynolds, he's got a fan base. He's got lots of readers already. That's probably, you don't need a huge amount more than that to just keep ticking over and putting out books. But it would be nice to have something really either groundbreaking or interesting, or which is sort of like a new thing in science fiction that you've not seen before. Maybe like House of Suns, or some, you know, an interesting exploration of a certain style of science fiction, or a certain idea in science fiction, like Terminal World, or even On the Steel Breeze, Blue Remembered Earth, or maybe just some really fun, you know, space battle, procedural action, police action detective work going on in space, which I could also do with if it's a follow-up to the prequel. So, yeah, good stuff. What else? No, I ran out of notes and I read the review out that I had in my notes here that I should have looked at. Yeah, that's it. I don't have much else to say about this. Good stuff. I mean, I could go on about the themes, like the major themes of it, but I think it's sort of one of those books where you just go, okay, this is a statement of the ideas of what, like, if this is the world and we do this, we're going to explore in these characters. But I don't think it's one of those things that it wasn't mind-blowing enough that, I mean, I've got strong thoughts about this and this is what I want to talk about. Like, even though I really did enjoy the thematic explorations of intelligence and consequences of actions and all these different kind of things that are explored, responsibility, personal responsibility, the worth of life, all that kind of stuff in this book. I felt like it was just sort of like, just read the book. There may be a cop-out of me that I don't have anything extra to say or any strong opinions about this. But maybe, again, that's a failing of the book. Even though I enjoyed those explorations and thematic explorations, I didn't really feel like it needed more than that. I don't know. It's a weird thing. So that's it for my review. I do want to, though, mention what I really enjoyed about this, that I did listen to it as an audiobook. It says here, narrated by Adjoa Ando, who also did the second book, I think. Although now I look at it, it says in the series that I didn't listen to On the Steel Breeze as an audiobook. Maybe I read it, but I'm sure I must have listened to it as an audiobook. But yes, Adjoa Ando does really well with this. Oh yeah, I could say what's interesting about this book is that what I really like about it, again, is that it is very progressive in terms of representation. It's not just, you know, white straight guys from Europe doing this kind of stuff. This whole book is centered around a world in which some, you know, East Africans, people from Tanzania, some of the most powerful people, and like everybody, like when you hear people talking to each other, it's not like you kind of, in our brains, we default that, of course, everyone's going to be speaking English in the future, or maybe Chinese or something. But here, you just go straight to different African languages. What's the language I'm thinking of? East African language. I can't believe the name of the language is just completely not Swahili. Is it Swahili? No, I don't even know. What is okay, I'm not going to search for it because I can't talk and I don't want to edit this podcast. Whatever the language is, let me just type in Swahili into Google, see where it comes up, and if this is the correct language. Yeah. Swahili, lingua franca of African Great Lakes region, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, Mozambique, and Democratic Republic of Congo. That's what I'm... So it is Swahili. I can't believe that completely slipped out of my head. So, yeah, it's good fun to... it's good fun to kind of have a... The people in the future aren't just, you know, like I say, Americans or Europeans or Chinese people. It is something a bit more inclusive. And, of course, the main characters in the book, it really does feel like someone can just go, right, I'm going to write a story, and each time we get to a new character, it's going to be like, okay, what gender are they? What race are they? Whatever. Roll of dice, flip a coin. Okay, this is female. And their partner, their love interest, or, you know, their sexuality, or their flip a coin. Okay, it's going to be like this. Oh, even like maybe not even gender. Maybe you're going to have someone who has no gender and they don't, and they have a different pronoun. Okay, you're going to do this one. And also maybe different species. It just gets to the point where it's really refreshing to read a book like that. And I know this book is a few years old, and this is becoming more of the trend in science fiction. And I, again, just really like it, because if I want a science fiction book about a white male, straight male person from Europe or America or wherever, or whatever I could identify with, there's so many of them. I don't need to really worry about that. But to have someone who was born in Tanzania, speaks Swahili, is a woman who then became an AI, who is then talking to another main character in this book, who is a you know, a descendant of that person, but, you know, has a wife, and she has a wife, and then talking to someone who, one of the main characters, has no gender and doesn't have relationships or what's going on. You know, it just makes it just more interesting, and it doesn't get in the way of storytelling. It never feels forced. There's never any comment about any of these things. It's not special. It's not even like, for example, was Ancillary Justice, where it's sort of like it's very specific, and the story is almost about somebody who doesn't understand, who can't tell gender, can't tell gender roles and all that kind of stuff. It's not even about that. It's just sort of like, it's total background to the story. It doesn't even need to be there. This story could have been told about, you know, white, straight men, but it isn't. And it's just refreshing that it doesn't have to be the default. And the story doesn't even comment on that. And it feels refreshing that Alistair Reynolds, who is a white, straight guy from, I was going to say England, let's say the UK. I'm not sure if he's Welsh or not, but... So it's just someone like that. It's sort of like it doesn't need that. It doesn't even feel like it's an effort for someone like him to just go, right, I'm just gonna do something else. You know, it can be something else. Also, it's really interesting to read this book and compare it to the books which are written by, say, gay African American people talking about women in Africa or something like that. Some of the books, other books that I've read recently, it's interesting to kind of compare this to that and the statements that those authors are making. Let me just go back to, what is it, Nnedi Okorafor, N.K. Jemisin, some of these other authors like that. They are writing books about those things. So it's fine that Alistair Reynolds isn't talking about what it's like to be an African woman living in the current world and talking about the prejudices that exist against them now. He's saying that in the future, I want to write about one of the most powerful, richest people in the world. In our world, it would be a bit weird if that was a gay woman from Tanzania. But in the future, it doesn't have to be that way. It's just a very easy choice. And then Alistair Reynolds doesn't feel like he's putting himself into the place of someone who has faced prejudice their entire life and a disadvantage their entire life, because he's actually writing a book in a world where that isn't true. It's in a world where he kind of like the ideals of, well, it's not exactly ideals, but, you know, it's just a different group. It's a different style of person who is in the foreground. And again, so it doesn't feel like he's appropriating the struggle of black people or African people or gay people or women or other historically persecuted groups, because he's not talking about that struggle. He's just including people into it. And, maybe that's a subtle point, but I do feel sometimes if I was reading a story written by a straight white European man about the struggles of black, gay, women from East Africa or something like that, or African-American women, it would feel like he was kind of like taking that struggle and like misrepresenting them, but kind of like taking that story away from people who should be telling that story and are able to tell that story better from a more personal point of view. Whereas Alistair Reynolds doesn't need to tell that story of persecution, but he can still tell stories about people with those characteristics, even if it isn't about persecution in those ways. Because the person who's really one of the people who are persecuted in this book isn't persecuted because she's a black woman. She's persecuted because she was once an artificial intelligence. And that's a different story that Alistair Reynolds can tell, whereas other people probably wouldn't have either the desire to tell that story, but also the skills and the kind of the venue, the long running series to tell the story of someone who exists in that way. So I guess that's it. So what I'm trying to say is that the audiobook narrator seemed to be perfectly suited to this. Ajoa Ando, a woman who does these accents of all these different characters really well. I really enjoyed it. I was actually just looking here I scrolled down to one review here. Anjoa Ando, this is a review on Audible, says, how could the performance have been better? Anjoa Ando is perfect, too perfect. I don't want to listen to characters that have such a heavy accent. I have trouble making out the narration. I found myself having to interpret her narrative sometimes, and that is nothing less than annoying. I didn't find that at all. I found the performance of these accents and different characters really good fun. Yes, good. I think it's good, really good. So if you want to listen to this book, I would say don't start with this book. If you're new to Alistair Reynolds, try a different book instead. But if you are going to start this, don't start with this book. Go back to Blue Remembered Earth and listen to that on Audible. And if you want, you can get this book for free. So check out audibletrial.com/SFBRP and download this book or any other book that you want and start a free trial. It helps out the podcast as well, helps support the podcast. If you sign up for a trial and there's ever a book that you don't want, it's really great. Or if you continue the trial and you sign up for a book and get a book and you don't like it, Audible has a satisfaction guaranteed guarantee where if you don't like a book, you can just say, I don't like this book. I listened to the first 3 hours, didn't get into it. Give me my credit back and you can just take another book. So the idea is that if you get one credit per month or two credit per month, the credit isn't just for you listening to an audiobook or your chance to listen to an audiobook. It's actually an audiobook that you are going to enjoy. Because if you don't like it, you can ask for your credit back and spend the credit somewhere else. So great stuff from Audible. I listen to lots of audiobooks from Audible and really enjoy it. So I do recommend it. Go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. That's it from me. Three and a half stars for this book. About 3.5 stars for the series overall, which is okay-ish. Good fun stuff. What else was I going to say? Yeah, follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge on Twitter. On Instagram, I'm at Luke Burge on Instagram. On YouTube, I'm Luke Burge on YouTube as well. You can check out my blog. Find that at lukeburge.com/blog. And what else do I normally say at this point? That's about it, really. Yeah, check out my YouTube channel. Lots of vlogging there at the moment. I think you'll enjoy it. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.